adagio of the beginning, contrasted with, I guess, a poco allegro, a moderato, that's supposed to have a lilting feel, just sort of right in the lilting groove, not fast and not not turgid in any way, lugubrious. There's a little bit of a third tempo. It's really more like a slowed down version of the first tempo on the final page of the risoluto. It's more just a broadening for emphasis. And I'll just comment that when I write works that I know are destined for liturgical performance, I always experience a kind of tension. That tension that exists, I think, for many modern composers, between the requirements, the teachings, really, of the church regarding music for the liturgy, along the lines of what we heard in the lecture yesterday from the Archbishop, as well as practicality, matters of, you know, insufficient by professional standards rehearsal time. In tension with, you know, every living composer's desire to sort of, you know, assert their individual stylistic personality. So this piece is a product of that tension. It probably leans much more towards the church than it does towards me.
You know, what's the first thing I noticed when I looked at the score was that you say duration, 3 minutes in English, and you say Benedict 16th, Gewidmet in German.
Well, that's an honor to his German birth.
Okay, and then you say Poco Adagio.
Oh, goodness. So it's also because it's polylingual.
So you're using, this is mixing up the languages a little bit.
It's universal.
I think you should choose which language you choose.
Okay.
No, I think it's universal.
Because it looks so beautiful, like it was printed.
Well, you know, ready. You know that same tempo, but spirited. I chose English there just because l'istesso tempo ma spiritoso was going to take up too much room. That's the only reason.
I always choose it in the shortest ones.
Yeah. No, but that your point is well taken.
So it's just the first thing.
Pardon me?
It's
finale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Finale and experience with lots and lots of octavos.
Thank you.
Same tempo, 72, but just with a more spirited feel. Right.
If we do that, if we do the first bar again, it's in 28.
Some other version of text setting at that point, change the text and in the original version of the slur, but now it makes no sense.
I like that resolution is in it. When the tempo changes in the middle of the second page, there's a fermata over the
over the first quarter.
We do that,
well, that's, you know, it's a dramatic pause, you know, sort of a grand pause, but not too long,
okay.
Just to set off the contrast there, going back to the homophonic texture and the return of the opening motif.
I quite like that in 28 and 29, instead of
anticipate a foretaste of glory.
It seems much more natural than, you know, than almost a Bren.
Well, you know,
okay,
that's exactly, and you often hear it that way. I listened to Victoria's Laudate Dominum before I started this, and, you know, in his, you know, typical, you know, beautiful, you know, soul-piercing Victoria, and then the Gloria Patri is just boom, bam, just like kick it into a different gear. And I wanted to find some way to weave the two things together somehow.
Yeah, I think this is good. There was something I was noticing, wasn't it? Was it Michael's piece, too, actually? And perhaps a few others as well. That first word, Laudate, the accent is on the second syllable, not the first. And I think that the way that Frank has it here in the first bar, Laudate, and it's actually curious.
Yes, I know.
11, that Laudate, is that on purpose to throw us off our game?
Not really. I did something that somebody setting a text really shouldn't do there, and I let the rhythm of the musical motif dominate. I normally try to be very scrupulous in avoiding that. I couldn't with this without abandoning my idea, and I didn't want to abandon the idea.
It seems to me that in that bar, in like 11, that problem could maybe be obviated to a certain extent by not having all the voices move on beat 3 of the bar, but perhaps have the tenor who's and the alto people that might who's singing the same text anyway. Omnes gentes laudate.
Yes, you know, you're right. The effect would be softened like that. Yeah, no, it's a good suggestion.
Or even a little accent mark.
An accent mark, especially if it's the only one of the pieces, then it's going to be interpreted as laudate. Seems to feel a little bit.
Could we do the quoniam confirmata est?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just going to say that I quite like that last chord that you have on the arm there. It works like surprisingly well. Especially because what we've had before is fairly.
Well, that was the challenge, you know. I mean, if I was going to write this and not introduce anything at all, like personal kind of harmonic language, it would have been a little pointless. But I did try to, you know, to be more scrupulous about thinking of liturgical practicalities, I guess you would say. But because the voice leading there, as you move into the amen is so natural from all the other parts, and because it's just a tonic dominant polychord.
Yeah. Part of what makes that chord work, I think, is precisely the distance between the alto D and the tenor C sharp.
Mm-hmm.
But with the split or with the divisi, then you only have half the altos.
Exactly right. So that the leading tone, the important tone, comes through undiluted,
okay,
but you get a more subtle coloring of
right.
The color tone of the D by splitting the altos, yeah.
And it's certainly much more effective than what you have.
I have a revision.
Aha, excellent, great, good.
I just didn't hear some of the, I didn't hear the seconds in the altos and sopranos fall into place at confirmata est.
Yeah.
Tenors and altos, try to bring out your imitation there in the inner voice. Starts with the tenors when you jump up to the high F sharp, and then the altos you follow a beat later. Just that, that three
oh, yeah.
Descending motif.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Monet.
Yeah.
24.
Thank you.
I heard there was a crescendo on Amen, and it's actually a decrescendo.
Oh, there was a decrescendo.
Well, I wasn't watching you, so I wasn't sure if you were.
In fact, I was not watching this.
Oh, okay.
The tenor's got the same.
So the thing though is that that chord is so great, and that C sharp and the tenors are so great. They were just kind of naturally doing that on their own.
Yeah,
I kind of like
loud and proud.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's great actually. I think that crescendo is
cool. This back here.
Well, maybe a hairpin. Maybe a hairpin.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as it's a quiet man.
Once we realized we're out there, we did pull that.
You're singing, but it works. You improvised here. I should have put in Puerto Rico's half. I should have put in because I wanted the Gloria to be conducted in two.
All right.
The 72 is for the half note. And so the 72
is for the half note.
You're right. That's a terrible oversight. By not putting in the metrical equivalent as we go into the.
That's what you understand.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what I meant by same tempo.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry. No, that's totally my fault.
There's one thing. It's the soprano's missed this and the alto's missed this at the short. Just because we hear that natural, and because everything we know
what it's set up, the D sharps. Yeah, I hear a lot of people, including myself, the first time through, not quite nailing the sharp on that degree. That's because I'm dealing with this mixolydian major tension through here. So I mean, half the time it's natural, half the time it's sharp. I don't know why.
There
are just what I heard.
Times in the bass part where it almost feels like a denatural chord, like in 35, especially because then it was.
I agree with you, but I like the kind of Lydian lift that the continuing with the sharp.
That's a brand of tea.
Yes, it is. Very good late in the afternoon when you're feeling fatigued. Yeah, so that you would get the sense as you cross the bar line of the B major triad, which would be lost if there were a D.
And so then in the conducting in 39 into 40 it would be so da 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 1 2 7 pair. So I mean it's a huge difference. You know, that's I think a really important thing. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, thank you for pointing out.
Can we reproduce the elaborate then in 29 or in 30? I think 30 would be more logical.
Well, yes, you're right. I did it in 20. You know, honestly, when I wrote this, having been to Colloquium before, I had no idea of the skill level or experience of the singers. When it was said it was going to be sung by everybody, I didn't know what everybody meant in terms of musical ability. So I put it in a bar ahead of time so that everybody would be prepared for it.
And of course, I think the great irony is that we sort of see the key change and everything else, and with the key change, we sort of don't see the.
Yeah, you're right. I shouldn't have tried to finesse that detail.
Yeah.
I should have put it in 30.
Yeah. Could we try it from 30 at that speed?
Yeah.
And then there's of course that huge change before. Mm-hmm. Huge change. Dun, 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 seven.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
Gloria Patri et Filio.
Yeah.
marvelous. Yes. Absolutely. I can't, the number of times I proved this, I still can't believe I missed that syllable. And those slurs,
so much.
It's like you get, you know, score blindness or something.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, it's a beautiful piece, right?
Oh, thanks.